today on CityCast Chicago. This city has no shortage of them really, really fancy restaurants. You know what I'm talking about. Tasting menus, molecular gastronomy, these unique small bite concoctions that are so expensive you wonder, is this even worth it? Lifestyle journalist Ari Bendersky says yes, and he's got tips for Chicago's fine dining beginners. It's Wednesday, November 1st. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Ari, welcome to CityCast Chicago.
It's good to be here, Jacoby. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the ins and outs of Chicago's fine dining scene, what's your most memorable experience in Chicago eating out at one of the fancier, more expensive restaurants?
Well, it's such a tough answer. There's been so many. I would honestly, Alinea, the first time, the only time I went was over the top, incredible. It was like a 6+ hour experience. And this was when they first started doing the chocolate dessert on the table. So we got to see that in the early days, and that was insane. It was right before they opened the aviary. So they were testing out their cocktails, but doing it in bite forms. So we started our meal with bites of basically 5 classic cocktails. So that was kind of got us a little drunk pretty quickly.
You mentioned the aviary. I have been there for cocktails, but Alinea is, I think, still Chicago's only 3-star Michelin restaurant. Anybody who has ever described it to me has always done one of two things. One, made it clear that they've only been once or twice. And two, they described this sort of over-the-top experience that if you weren't familiar with fine dining, those descriptions would just be like, all right, that's what it is. But for a lot of people, what actually is fine dining? Is it the fact that it's expensive? Is it the fact that the dishes seem, you know, abstract and artistic? What makes a restaurant fine dining, Ari?
It's all of the above. Going back historically, it used to be the hushed room, white tablecloth, had to wear a blazer or a dress. It was more expensive. It was harder to get into. It was usually French. And over the years, as we moved into a little bit more of modern culinary in the last 10, 15, even 20 years, it became a little bit more approachable as far as the decor, what you had to wear, the ambiance, the vibe, etc. But there are still places that are set apart at the cost level, which can be prohibitive. You can define it different ways for different people. Oftentimes, it's the quality of the food. So it might be a little bit more luxurious of ingredients. It could have Wagyu, caviar. It could have oysters, scallops, crab, things that are considered to be a little bit more luxurious. It's the way that the food is presented on the plate. There is an elegance. Oftentimes, there's an artistry. You know, sometimes it is presented like at a place like Alinea, where it's you're getting a bite of something that you think that looks totally different than what you're tasting. So there's a little bit of magic in how they're creating the food. So, you know, it's not like you're just getting a burger. It could be an incredible burger. It might be the best burger you've ever had. Like if you're going to like Small Cheval or something like that, and you just get a really great burger or the Loyalist, they're presenting food in a different way that's more elevated than you're going to get at your, you know, fast casual or casual establishment.
When I hear this description, it's hard to think that it isn't, in some ways, maybe a little white, a little classist, a little inaccessible. Is in some ways, is that the story or the stigma of fine dining? Is that beyond being extremely expensive, that it feels inaccessible to a ton of people?
I think that probably there was a time that it was that, you know, sort of like that fancy country club that didn't allow people of color or Jews to come and play golf there. I think that there are places like that probably that still do exist, probably more of a private club sort of a vibe. But I think that especially as millennials got older and wanted to have more experiences and, you know, people of all colors and races were going out and trying to do different things, I think that it became more accessible. Is it inaccessible from a pricing perspective? Sure. Does anybody get turned away? No. Are there places that like Valhalla in Time Out Market, which is a tasting menu experience, but also has an a la carte option that you could just order off the menu. Their whole vibe is come as you are. So yeah, you could be wearing shorts and come in and sit down and have a great meal. So, you know, are there people who might feel uncomfortable or might think that it's not accessible to them? Sure. But I think that I don't know that race necessarily plays into it like it maybe used to.
Who are some of the local chefs that are challenging the idea of what a fine dining restaurant is? I think about one of my first experiences in Chicago was over at El Idea, and it was a restaurant that felt, you know, again, price prohibitive, but when I walked in, it still felt come as you are. The chefs talked to you as they were bringing things out. It felt like they were educating you on their histories as well. And you know, I felt a part of the crew for the night.
Yeah, I think that like what Philip Foss was doing at Elle really did kind of push the boundaries there, just like Schwa did.
I've been to Schwa too in Wicker Park.
Where it's just like, you feel like you're part of it. You feel like it's a party. Sometimes it could be a little crazy, you know, but that's kind of part of the fun experience. But then there are a lot of newer chefs. I just wrote about in Time Out Chicago, an article about this new crop of younger chefs who are doing things to kind of break the definition of fine dining or a prefix menu. You know, you go to the Coach House at Waswan, where it is an Indian restaurant and it's very authentic. And it is Zubair Mohajer, who is Indian. You know, he is putting out food that he grew up eating and cooking, experiencing with his mom and his grandmother in the kitchen. Over at Indian, it's the same sort of thing. You know, up in Rogers Park, Cambodian restaurant that I'm at, the Khmer Fine Dining, it literally tells the story of her people through the war and the genocide that happened in the 70s under the Khmer Rouge. So there are ways that fine dining and finer dining are being presented, but also that make it more accessible, that they're telling stories. You know, at Waswan, Zubair comes out and he's like, this is who I am. I'm going to talk how I talk. I'm going to, as far as like having profanity in his presentation or whatever it is, he gets excited about the food and he's not worried about if somebody's going to judge him based on how he's presenting the food. He wants them to enjoy the food that he's making and to know the story that the food is telling.
When we think about fine dining and what makes fine dining, I think about some of the shows I watch on like Netflix, and it always seems that when a chef is trying to open a, you know, a soul food restaurant, a Caribbean restaurant, an African restaurant, there's this idea that they have to elevate the food for it to be fine dining. Do you think that's the case across the scene in Chicago, that there needs to be this, you know, this extra level of artistry or something put on top of people's, you know, foods of origin for it to be considered fine dining?
I don't know if it necessarily needs to have the element of like artistry or elegance. Not to say that food that is being put up isn't elegant, no matter what the category is. Go to Virtue in Hyde Park. Eric Williams, who's another person, like he worked his way up in the ranks, you know, started at MK and became the executive chef, and he eventually opened Virtue. And we all know how hailed and celebrated he is nationally, not even just in Chicago. And you go to Virtue and, you know, you get the shrimp and grits and it's very familiar and it's very approachable, but there is another level to it that, you know, the food is just that much better, but it doesn't have to be presented in a way that it is like painting on the plate or put on the plate with tweezers.
All right. A little knuckle of grits with like sort of a cut up shrimp spread across the plate.
Right. So the food is still beautiful and it's incredible and the flavors are there. You know, there's a reason that Damar Brown was the fan favorite on Top Chef, you know, and that he won a James Beard Award the year after Eric Williams did. They're doing incredible food down there, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be in this vaunted space of 3 Michelin star fine dining atmosphere.
For for somebody who is, you know, maybe saved up for a special occasion and they're trying to figure out where are Chicago's fine dining experiences, should they just be looking for awards, Michelin stars, James Beard, Bib Gourmands? You know, how can they distinguish their list when they're trying to find a place?
First thing I would say is, you know, if you're looking for a more elevated experience that is a tasting menu concept, go to Google and Google best tasting menu experiences in Chicago. Start there. See what the price points are. Where does that fit in with what you want to spend? You know, is it Indian? Is it French? Is it Mexican? What are you looking for? Is it something that requires a dress code? Do you want to get dressed up? Do you want to be more casual? Do you want to sit at a table with other people like you could do at Duxelles, which is an underground dining experience that I also wrote about, or the Omakase Room, where you sit with 10 people around the chefs? You could look at James Beard. You could look at Michelin stars. And I would say, honestly, if you look at like one Michelin star restaurants, you're going to still get that level of quality and excellence, but it is going to be a little bit more casual and a little bit more affordable. Just go up to 2 stars, price point goes up. Still could be casual. I mean, Alinea, I don't even know that they have a dress code anymore. I don't think they require a blazer for guys or whatever it is.
I'm going to be honest. If I'm giving you $200, $300, $400, don't tell me what to wear. Get out of my face. Like,
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Are some restaurants more service oriented than others? Like, do some places feel like you have to be, like it's a little bit more exclusive versus others that are maybe more welcoming, regardless of who you are?
I think when you're dining at that level, hospitality, especially in Chicago, rarely do I find that places are inhospitable or not welcoming or not wanting to have you have the best experience possible. You're coming in to spend your money with them, no matter if you're spending $50 for a dinner or if you're spending $500 for a dinner. I'm going to say almost every single place is going to go out of their way to make it good for you.
I just went to Indian over the weekend, which has an a la carte menu, has a pretty well-known tasting menu. And I mean, our waitress, she was so accommodating, was willing to check on everything with the chef, was willing to make alterations, was willing to, it was like over and above in terms of explaining ingredients that we didn't understand. You know, at one point I was like, okay, this cocktail says it was infused with goat cheese. Like, what does that look like? Make that make sense for me. And she was able to do that. You know, some people might hear tasting menu and it conjures up that stereotype of tiny bites, weird foam, or something that, you know, isn't going to be filling. Are you going to get enough food at a lot of these spots across the city, especially if you drop in a couple $100?
I hope so.
I mean, I have left a quote unquote fine dining restaurant and went and got a 6-piece from Harold's because I was still hungry.
I had that experience at, I'm not going to say what the restaurant was, but a little bit more of a conceptual menu that they were doing. And I was with some friends and we also had the wine pairings and we were pretty lit by the time we were done and we were really hungry and we went up the street and we got burgers because we were not satisfied. But I would say that is definitely the exception to the norm where, I mean, you were satisfied at Indian, weren't you?
I was. Those lamb chops were so good. So good.
And it's so beautiful. Like the presentation and the room is gorgeous. So I'm going to say that, you know, the majority of places you're going, you're not leaving hungry. You are getting multiple courses and you think that it is going to be little bites. And sometimes a course could comprise like 3, 4, 5 little bites. And that's one course. You know, another one is going to be a larger piece of meat, but with other things on the plate. And by the time you're done, you have 8, 9, 10, 15 courses, depending on where you are. You're going to be satisfied.
What's your advice for somebody who is looking at a dish that, I mean, sure, it might be beautiful to look at, but it is extremely unusual or has flavors and ingredients they've never tried? How do you convince your friends to stay open-minded at a restaurant?
You just got to go for it. You know, you're there. You're spending the money. You know, I know there are people who are not adventurous eaters, but one of my mottos, especially when it comes to food, is I try everything at least once. If you've never had it, how do you know you don't like it? So yep. Eat it. If you don't like it, you know, you maybe tell the server or the chef if you're in if they're that close to you, maybe they have something else that you can eat. And a lot of places sometimes, like, they will say that they don't accommodate dietary restrictions, but most places do.
Yeah, if you give them a bit of a call ahead of time, that dessert at El Idea, with the potato and the vanilla ice cream, with the dry ice. Like, it takes a bit, because I'm used to dipping my French fries in ice cream. But the idea of the potato sitting at the bottom, you know, the first few scoops, it was a little jarring. But by the end of it, it felt a little nostalgic overall.
Yeah, it's like when you're a kid and you go to McDonald's and you got the French fries and you dip your French fries in the vanilla shake. You know, like, right when you started describing it, that's what it makes me think of.
It feels like the lines between casual versus upscale or fine dining are constantly being blurred in Chicago, especially with these newer chefs making their mark. How much do these distinctions matter for diners?
I think that's the beautiful thing about dining these days, is that those lines are blurred. And, you know, you could go to so many places, whether it's in Logan Square, in Hyde Park, in Fulton Market, that you're going to drop cash on your dinner. Like, it's, you know, for a couple, it's rare to get out of there without spending $150 at a quote unquote normal casual restaurant these days. You know, prices have gone up. But I think that dining has become so much more about experiences, and you're going to notice that when you walk in the door, you know, and it doesn't have to be a fancy, beautiful space. Like, it could be all about the great hospitality and the incredible food in a more casual environment. And so I think that is has been going on in finer dining, if you want to call it that, for the last, you know, 10 years.
Obviously, we've named off several restaurants. If you had to give someone a suggestion, a two or three restaurants, you know, that they want to try out if they wanted to give Chicago's fine dining scene a taste, what are a couple of those places?
So I think if you're looking to have like a really nice night out, that you want to spend some extra money, that you want to have a little bit more elevated experience, there's two that I'm going to say. So Smith, you know, it's a lot of times it's referred to as Smith and the Loyalist, and they're two separate restaurants, but there's one upstairs, one is downstairs. Smith, John and Karen Shields, two Michelin star restaurant in Fulton Market. The thing that I really love about his food is that he does a really beautiful job with vegetables and seafood. You're still going to get meat, but like the things that he does with produce and seafood is next level. And Oriel, which is also a two Michelin star restaurant. If you want to come down a level, you know, Elska, also in Fulton Market, it's American food with a Danish bent. And, you know, David Posey and Anna Posey, who are married, he's pastry chef, he's the savory chef. Their food is incredible. But if you're looking for something really a little bit different, you know, like the places I mentioned in the Time Out article, Valhalla, Wazwan, Indien, even Indien's sister restaurant, which is Mediterranean, Cipher, S-I-F-R, which is just down the street. So those are some places to go and check out. But I mean, again, like there's no shortage of really fantastic places to eat in Chicago. Avec is consistently will always be one of my most favorite places to eat, always.
Ari Bendersky has written for Time Out and also writes the Substack, Something Glorious with Ari Bendersky. Thank you for joining us on CityCast today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Before I let you go, we got more news, events, and our neighborhood guides at our website, chicago.citycast.fm. Today, we got a new one for Andersonville. If you just click the neighborhood guides tab on our website, it'll show you our favorites across the Chicagoland area. Some good news. The 40th annual Chicago International Children's Film Festival begins Friday and runs for the next 2 weeks. There are over 250 films, including animation, documentaries, and action movies for young people aged 2 to 18. See the full schedule of in-person and virtual options in the show notes. As always, we appreciate you for listening and reading. Seriously, thank you. It means a lot to us. I'm going to talk to you bright and early tomorrow. Peace. I think that was a good take. I think that was a good take. I think it was a good take. Yeah.